Welcome to the Fabric Podcast and reimagining our current conversation. We're leaning on several Twin Cities leaders to help us reimagine our lives and the systems we're part of. In this episode, Ihotu Ali shapes a holistic conversation around healing, not just the body or even the individual. You'll also hear the voices of Melissa Locke, Greg Meyer, and Aaron Tripolino as they join in this conversation too. Listen as Ihotu helps us reimagine healing all of us.
Minnesota Makoche, sweet grass, not tear gas. Cedar, chamomile, and ginger. Peach leaves and palm oil. Looking up for answers, we ask what plants will teach us in silence how to snuggle and hug even after a fight. How to remember we are soft beneath our shields. We are tired, but we are the ones still alive. Under what tree can we sit and not fear what we feel? Sit beside pain and not lurch in to fix? What clouds will shape shift into recipes for truth and transformative justice? When my own pain is so much that I run or I freeze, who else's struggle can I even see clearly? How do I learn to stand tall when all I've known is bended knees? How many crimes begin with a life in turmoil? Are we tending sick plants without feeding their soil? When the soil is fed, we could sit beside our enemies under an oak, and in the very awkward silence, still think to crack a joke. If we were a plant, we must look thirsty, yearning but wired and tired, big dreams but blind to our capacity. Because what makes us juicy enough to learn and to bend is not another new project, it's what we choose to end. Don't overcomplicate this crisis. We are resilient plants, just right now in strife. We don't need fancy policies, just those that support our basics of life. Food, water, care. For once, maybe we start justice there. Because the ripples of what we do now, what we choose now, are felt and aligned across seven generations, seven portals, forwards and backwards in time. Minnesota Makoche, from wherever you're watching this, I'm grateful to be here with you today.
Thank you, Ihotu. We're so grateful you're here. So I think this is a first that we have someone with us who's been featured in Rolling Stone magazine. Ihotu means love in the Idoma language. And Ihotu is a doula. And that is how we are connected with you, is through the doula community with Aaron, who is also a doula. We're grateful for that. And Ihotu is the granddaughter of a traditional Nigerian chief and also of Polish-Irish farmers, graduate of Columbia University, the School of Public Health, and you worked on research on maternal health with the United Nations, right? Then, thinking about Western medicine and being fascinated with that and the overlap with traditional medicine, Ihotu spent a decade studying Afro-Indigenous maternal and cultural practices for childbirth and womb healing, and now is in medical training for chiropractic care and neuroscience and has founded the Minnesota Healing Justice Network, which is what brought you to Rolling Stone, because during the uprisings, you were just doing great work around healing and rest for the healers and everyone that was so exhausted.
Yes, and also Rhonda's a co-founder, and Aisha, who gifted this water to me, this moon water, is also a co-founder.
I really encourage you to explore Yehotu's website about cultural healing workshops and practices and resources for everyone, yehotuali.com. You're going to want more. So for today, I also want to invite Aaron Tripolino to join us and Greg Meyer. We lost him. Anyway, he'll be here. He's going to make a big reveal entrance, too. So we talked about wanting to have a variety of folks up here, especially just to talk about our people. That seems like a foundational question that you ask. Who are your people? So who are your people?
So you mentioned some of my people are on this table. My people are from going way back, Polish and Irish people, definitely Minnesota people in the present. And then my dad's side of the family is from Nigeria, the Ichama village, Idoma people in central Nigeria. One fun story about my mom's people. So my great-grandma, Frances John, she was born in 1900 in southern Minnesota near Blue Earth. And when she was born, she was premature. And, you know, there was no NICU back then, right? And so, like, a newborn intensive care for preemies. Mm-hmm. So when she was born, the story that was told down to me was they put her in a shoebox. They put the shoebox in the oven, turned it on low, and they padded the shoebox with, like, cotton balls, and they fed her with a dropper. And, you know, these specialized parts, like senses, don't develop well when you're a preemie, so she never could see well or hear well, but she lived to be 99 years old. So we are some tough cookies.
Wow.
Can you imagine putting a baby in the oven right now?
Right.
So I have a...
past, present, future. Who knows what's coming?
Wow. I have a grandma who was a tough cookie, too. Lillian, who came from the Vongsness family, from the community of Vongsness in Norway, Western Norway. They were farmers. But the way she met my grandfather was that she won a ski jumping contest. And she... had never done it before, and he was impressed. So that's one side, and then my great-grandfather, Richard, came from Germany, and so Chip and Marie are my grandparents, and their parents were immigrants from Germany. So how about you, Aaron?
Also almost completely from Germany. One side that's a little unknown, maybe from England. But one story that I connected with recently, and also my cousin Katrina's over there, so this is her great-great-grandfather also. He, as a teenager, immigrated here from Germany. He had a limp, so he was unable to serve in the war, and came here with like a quarter and an apple, I think is the story. Ended up settling in Ohio and became the community leader, and... was just this quite the character, it sounds like. But one thing that I didn't know about is that on his land, he made space for the town herbalist to grow the herbs to bring healing to that small community in northern Ohio. And that was a fun thing to learn recently.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So a question... if you see Greg later, is to ask him, who are your people? Okay? But we encourage you now to find a pen and some paper. Who are your people? Just make some notes about your own people. And I bet you'll start to think of some of those fun stories.
And I'll say, too, that we don't always know our people. And that's okay, because they're inside of us.
Yeah.
So if you don't know stories... maybe sit quietly and just say, what do I know? I know my hair is this color. I know my skin is this color. I know I like these things. And then wherever you whatever, right? Birth-wise or culture-raising-wise gave you those things, that's also your people.
Thank you.
Big reveal.
Hi, Greg.
I bet, yes.
You're going to have a lot of people asking you later, who are your people?
Okay.
Do you want to just tell us briefly?
In a really immediate sense, it's people from these Northwoods, upper Midwest, but long ago. So all my great-grandparents, three sets of the four immigrated from Germany back in the 1850s, and one grandmother in the 1890s. And they all left Germany, from all different areas of Germany, because the land or farms or whatever that they shared had been divided more times than they could ever be divided. Mm. And so opportunity, which was America, right? Mm. Part of the story. So they came here and all settled in northern Kansas as farmers, and my grandparents lost their farms during the Depression and had to move to town gradually and find jobs just to work, and that's where I came from.
Thank you.
I, as a mixed-race person, experience the world constantly in terms of many different identities living inside of myself. So in this time, we're going to bring up many different cultural backgrounds and just try to find yourself in the story, as well as find other people unlike you in the story. So there were so many stories flashing in my mind during that. I don't know for any of you. I was thinking of the quarter and the apple. Traveling with just that, and the courage and the risk, and obviously this story here of historic Black Americans, of which I'm not a part, but I also experience the racism that continues in the present day. And I think about this idea of evolution and time. And healing all of us means all of us here in this present, but it also means healing the past and our ancestors and what they had to go through or what they experienced or what they thought they had to do to other people in order to survive and what healing we do now for them and what we do now that's healing for the next generation. So I want to really open up that expansive view. When we say all, it's the plants, it's the earth, it's the past, it's the future. And what we do now does have ripples.
It sounds like you're talking about cultural healing, that phrase that you use. and it's a new phrase to me since I met you. So I think that's a great starting point as we talk here about how do you think about cultural healing? Can you help bring us even further into that?
Yeah. So let's start with doing a little visualizing, right? Think about an injury that you had. Maybe one time when you broke the skin. And if you have had some pretty bad injuries and it's hard to kind of go there, maybe we all just think about a paper cut on her finger. Could everyone like hold up their finger and be like, okay, I remember getting a paper cut. And when you get a cut, you feel heat and pain because of your body's immune system, right? Your protectors inside come rushing out to help. So that process of healing is to bring back together what was cut, what was divided, right? And that scar that grows is stronger, the skin is stronger than the skin was beforehand. So the way that at Oshun Center for Intercultural Healing and myself, I think about cultural healing, healing the individual in ways that also ripple out to the collective. And that big collective that we talked about, right? So a little bit about Western medicine. So Western medicine was developed off of working on cadavers. Right? This is the brilliance of Western medicine. We've created innovative surgeries, laparoscopic surgery, very fine-tuned, precise ability to go inside the body and really know every layer of the body. And I've spent the last year in a cadaver lab, so I'm very intimately aware with this. So physical body healing is Western medicine specialty, and I think it does it very well. In fact, the best. Chinese medicine, different types of traditional medicine, they look at other types of healing in this big collective picture. So we get cut in a lot more ways than just our physical body, don't we? We get cut in a lot of ways. For example, in the physical way, we've been maybe hurt in our body this past year, getting COVID. Yeah, that's one. Maybe chronic pain getting worse because we can't get the care that we need because of the shutdowns. Maybe chronic neck or back pain because of working on screens, right? Anyone have had any of those things? Pain,
yes.
COVID. Okay, I've a few. So when I teach on cultural medicines, we talk about food, herbs, folk advice that sometimes we call old wives' tales. Some of them actually work, that are passed mm-hmm. down through families and cultures outside of the formal medical system. And some of them are found to be still helpful. So some of these folk medicines come up even with COVID or back pain, right? Like you get sick, you take chicken soup, have some ginger tea, rest. Mm-hmm. Mullein is an herb that a lot of herbalists have been, it's been sold out of herbal stores because it's good for the respiratory system, right? It's not going to prevent.
It was blackberry brandy, my grandma would say.
Really? Like, can you make elderberry brandy?
It's not very good. I can tell you it's not very good.
But does it work?
Oh, no. I haven't been able to give it enough of a try.
So, there's no evidence on these things. We don't know.
Try it, though.
Well, and then actually vaccines started as a folk medicine, right? With smallpox.
I didn't know that.
They would slice a small boil.
Wow.
And put, okay, close your ears if you're not, if you're very sensitive, but a little bit of the pus, which is neutrophils, part of the immune system, would be put into someone, you would put it into like an open sore in somebody, and they would get a very mild version of smallpox, and they wouldn't get the bad version of smallpox. That's how vaccines started. And vaccines have been integrated from folk medicine into the Western medicine, so it's mass-produced, and it's made with much fancier technology mm-hmm. now. But that original idea is folk medicine.
Yeah.
It was done in Africa as well. It was actually brought here by the slaves. And it came from many places. Women healers, African healers brought it up into the United States.
So that's like the physical body healing. But you also, there's this disconnection bigger than that I think you speak to as a healer.
Yeah. Well, also hurt in our heart, in our emotions. We're grieving the loss of loved ones. We're grieving the loss of many things right now. We're hurt in our mind and our spirit. Maybe some of us are frustrated at politics, frustrated at the pandemic, how it's going, frustrated at racism, frustration, right? This is stuff that, I feel like shouting it out too. Racism, police brutality. Like if you don't feel something boiling, like the heat is, turn on the heat in the room, right? Mm-hmm. Susto is a Spanish word for fright. And I was taught this in my training in the Maya tradition as a sickness caused by the soul being scared out of the body. Or some more Western healers would call it fragmented into pieces. So without the soul, the body becomes weak. The body becomes nervous, they'll use that term, or vulnerable to frequent illness. It is traditionally, in certain cultures, treated with herbs, with prayers, and with body work, especially at the forehead, on the jaw, and at the soles of the feet. I actually saw a client yesterday who she felt she was feeling chronic illness, started by something like Susto. And so we were trying to find a way with integrity and bringing in her tradition to also heal what is a spiritual illness that I think still exists, that Western medicine has no medicine for.
Susto means fright.
Fright.
Yeah. Wow.
And there's a whole litany of spiritual illnesses that are talked about by African healers, by Mexican healers, right, by indigenous American healers, that has not been taken up into the formal American, you know, Western system. And so we just don't have those medicines as accessible. And the women healers of the European traditions were burned, right? So we've lost a lot. But it was always there. So we also suffer from cuts and disconnection to each other, right? Maybe people who are different from us, but also maybe even within our own families. Then we're also disconnected to the land and the ecosystems around us and our ancestors from the past, unless we keep those stories going. And do we always think, as Native Americans would say, 7 generations into the future? So the Oshun Center for Intercultural Healing is about reclaiming who we were before we were divided. And we were divided by what I call the 3 C's. So 3 cuts, right? 3 fingers here. So cut for crusades, cut for colonialism, a cut for capitalism. These cuts have turned our society from a circle where we shared information, we were in community, no one was above each other, from a circle to a ladder up into the sky where there's actually no top. So we're trying really hard either to get to the top, which we'll never reach, we're always climbing, or we're just trying to stay off the bottom. And we feel like we're either not enough, we're no good, we're just, you know, languishing, or we feel like we're in the rafters and we worked hard, so we got up here and other people should, you know, listen to us and do what we did. So here's one realization I've had since the uprising, especially. All of our isms, racism, sexism, classism, issues around gender, disability, chronic illness, all of these, they aren't solved by bringing folks up this ladder. That isn't bad. It helps in small ways, but the problem doesn't solve itself. The problem is solved by reclaiming the circle.
This really hit me, Ihotu. It's not the ladder. Like the solutions aren't on this ladder. And my husband and I were yesterday just talking about this constant buzzing in our minds that is always comparing and measuring, and how much did I get done compared to my expectations or to that person. There's just this built-in measurement and comparing going on all the time. And I want to throw the ladder away. But this idea of reclaiming a circle as part of our reimagining healing feels really powerful to me.
It also feels like the ladder is my independent status. Like, what have I achieved? Where have I gotten myself? Whereas the circle is something, is my context that I'm in, you know, to use our metaphor, fabric. The fabric is the circle. That's, we are dependent in part of one another rather than apart from each other, having to achieve, but we find our wholeness, we find our strength, our resilience in the context of the larger fabric that we are part of. And those threads don't disappear. Each of them adds beauty to the fabric. But they can't, you know, by trying to make your thread get out of that fabric, you have not, you've only weakened yourself, right? Mm.
There's a picture, of the circles that you work with.
So the Oshun Center looks at healings returning to the circle, right? And circles show up everywhere, right? In nature, in science, in culture. So this is one circle. This is a public health theory by American psychologist Yuri Bronfenbrenner. He created this ecological systems model theory, placing the child at the center. And then the child is affected by all the ripples that, you know, the child extends out, but then those ripples kind of enclose this child in care, right? So you have different words here, but I would add like family, community, mm-hmm. culture, right? Are the circles holding our children at the center. Restorative justice movement uses circle practice, described by these books here, which is they've adapted from Native American indigenous tradition, right? To resolve conflict. Then another circle comes from what West African elder Malidoma Somme, who's he changed my life, and big elder in my life, even though I've never met him. He calls indigenous perspective. So by indigenous perspective, he's meaning non-Western, non-industrialized, right? That this is actually a global perspective that exists in every culture, but in some cultures it's been kind of forgotten. Right.
Okay.
And so in this indigenous perspective, and he's speaking to his experience from growing up in Burkina Faso, this is where people regularly spend time talking in circle. And in the U.S. culture, we generally don't do that. Look at this setup right now. You guys are listening, and we're at the top of the ladder.
We're going to change that in a couple minutes.
Right. But you see how it shows up all the time. Right.
Yeah.
So African traditional healing uses circle and ritual and ceremony, which we'll talk more about, as a way of slowing down, noticing the social and environmental nuance that we miss when we're busy, and healing from a place of tending to your heart and shifting your energy from pain and sadness to like joy and abundance, rather than only analyzing sickness in the mind. So heart-centered versus mind-centered. So let's come back to the cut, and then I'll wrap up this little TED Talk. Okay, so...
Yeah, there's so much good stuff to do.
I just want to say this real quick, and then we can go to the circle conversation.
Go for it.
So we go back to our paper cut. Cultural healing is a process of creating not just a healthy body, but healthy communities. So in the Schoen Center, we have this small community that's kind of, you know, grew out of the Minnesota Healing Justice Network, where it's like 15 of us, where we are trying to show up for each other and be each other's protectors, right? When there's a cut, when there's bloodshed, and, you know, we're still working at this, but we promise to come rushing to help each other, like the immune system, and to sew the divided sides back together. If there's a conflict that comes up, you know, talking about it, being there for each other. And I feel like it's just been such a journey with everyone from the uprising. I feel like we've done so much experimental, beautiful work together and explored a lot more of our own histories, as well as like our interconnected histories. So what has come up from that whole experience is this concept of soul family. Now, we're raised by our families. We might raise a family. But who's raising our soul? Mm-hmm. Who are the people and maybe non-human beings that are a part of raising our soul, that could be a part of our soul family? And what I think about, like, the connections and the work that is really important to my soul, that my budget should not care so much about, right? How can I devote time and money to my soul work rather than just moving up the ladder, devoting time and energy and money to what brings me ultimate peace and healing in the big picture?
Yeah, I think it would be great to do an example of, so we all have traditions that we have learned, and some of them are healing and don't cause harm, but some of them aren't as helpful, and yeah, they're hurtful, harmful. And we might want to evolve away from some and towards some of our own traditions. And that was a question that you helped us start asking as we were talking, preparing for this, and had each of us think of our own examples. And for today, for now, I wonder if, Aaron, you could share your example to move us into thinking about that. And everyone will be invited to think about that and hopefully get a chance to circle up with one other person and talk through that. But why don't you help us start thinking, Aaron?
Okay, so what is one tradition I want to carry forward and one that I want to leave behind? Could go so many places, but as a really simple simple answer here, one tradition that I want to bring forward is pausing and giving thanks before every meal that we eat. And in our family right now, we have a whole myriad of silly songs from camp days and ones that we've made up as a family that we'll sing. And sometimes when it's my turn, it's more serious because that's me. and I'll pause and be grateful for our food. And that's something that's like when we go home to visit any side of my family, it's very like you do not even touch your plate or your food until you pray. and so I do want to bring that pause to be grateful before we move forward. But then with another meal that is coming up soon here, Thanksgiving, that is feeling less great for me to move forward in ways that we've seen modeled by our family, by having cute little pilgrims on the table, like little figurines and other things that highlight pilgrims and this cool journey that they had coming here. And for our own family, trying to leave some of the harmful aspects of that behind and learn about a more true story, a truer picture. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we have now in our home is a really large framed poster of the United States with all of the names of indigenous tribes and where, like, instead of the state names, it's the original people groups who lived here. And bringing things like that into our home and talking about that on this day of Thanksgiving rather than the traditional story that I grew up learning and like dressing up like pilgrims at school. I want to bring something bigger mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and more true. Mm-hmm. So, or leave behind. That's the one I'm evolving away from, that simple story of Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, yeah. So, I mean, thinking about what are some ways, let's like workshop, what could we do around that? Especially the Thanksgiving piece is what I really was thinking, like, oh yeah, Thanksgiving, this is a big moment. And in a way, it's a ceremony in and of itself.
Yeah, there's a lot of great memories that our families hold around that traditional meal.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I think about, oh, are they coming back? So I'll just say really briefly, ritual is basically like a party with symbolism, or ceremony is basically like a party that has more meaning and more love in it. So if you think of like a dinner table, so when we did a ceremony recently with someone who had a baby, mm-hmm. and we dressed up, you know, we made a little altar with different pieces, and it was almost like the table was the centerpiece. So you think about putting things on the table, and with Thanksgiving, I was like, what if you had, you know, within your decorations, little, you know, did you know this history? Or on each plate, it has a story of someone, or even just, you know, maybe imagine what they, at that original dinner, however it went, like, what was the vibe supposed to be? And if it was a vibe of generosity and loving and caring, can there be, like, little affirmations on each plate? Hmm. That bring that vibe, as well mm-hmm. as telling the history, because we kind of need both. We need that abundance and joy as well mm-hmm. as the hard stuff.
Yeah, and even starting like with a land acknowledgement and honoring the earth yeah. in that moment too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What does this look like for you? What comes to mind as you, to start practicing for yourself? What is a tradition I have that I want to bring forward? And what is something I want to let go of?
Think about sitting around a campfire, maybe putting your hands out with the warmth. It's snow and cold out in the season. And maybe just take yourself to a place where the stars are above you. The night is clear, and maybe there's northern lights. And it's just this magical moment. You've got warm food in your belly. You've got abundance around you. You've got nothing to do. And you just suddenly get this epiphany that you're connected to everything around you, like everything. Yeah. Wow. And you feel like light, and you feel joyful, and you know that you belong. And maybe just take a moment to feel into that. What do you notice? Anyone notice anything? Ooh, the edges of your body. Breathing.
I'm smiling.
Smiles. Wholeness. So think now, if you captured all of that energy into a bottle, and then you took that in your body into a room where there's fear and there's anger, but you are steadfast in that connected whole breath place, I wonder if that room might become warmer and more relaxed, and that those people might start to soften, not because you told them how they need to be. Mm. You didn't say anything, actually. You just reminded them how good joy feels. Mm. So that's what I'm talking about. You can't hold fear and joy at the same time. And cultured healing is doing that inner work, finding the fun, play, parties, ritual, however you call it, moments every week, every month, every year. Remind yourself how to get back to that place. Shift your energy first and let it ripple out to the collective.
Thanks for listening. We hope this conversation continues in your life. You can connect with others through our social media accounts at FabricMPLS, or find resources for discussion with smaller groups, family, and friends on our website, FabricMPLS.com. If there was just you and me.